behind the wheel, under the hood, and beyond with Car Stuff from HowStuffWorks.com.
Hi, and welcome to Car Stuff. I'm Scott Benjamin.
And I am Ben Bolin.
Ben, you know what I want to do today?
What do you want to do today?
I want to start out today's podcast by mentioning our website again.
Oh, yes, our website, carstuffshow.com.
That's right, and there's so much there. I mean, people that, you know, go to iTunes or wherever and get their information, you know, their podcast.
Sure.
That's fine still, but you can go to carstuffshow.com and get the podcast. You can read the blog.
Mm-hmm.
You can see photos of you and I. You can look at videos that we're producing, and we're releasing those, I think it's once a week at this point.
Yeah.
But we're doing all kinds of fun stuff there. So, you know, again, check out carstuffshow.com. There's just a lot going on there. It's a brand new thing for us.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a lot to just kind of poke around and look at. So
yeah, we're super excited.
Yeah,
it's
very
an easy
excited.
Way to find our podcast too. We've got the whole catalog because we've been doing this for a while, so you can just cruise through that list and check out anything that you're looking for, which will really help listeners who want to give us some suggestions about things that we should be covering.
And speaking of listeners who give us suggestions, we have one today, right? Today's topic.
Yes, sir. Alex from Connecticut writes to us. Now, Alex wrote to us. Hey, he wrote to us this year, so we're doing better.
Oh, wow.
We're catching up.
We're really caught up.
Yeah. Look at us honor students. So Alex says, hey, guys, I was listening to your episode on the Karmann Ghia, and it got me interested in the history of cars. I took a look through your episodes, and I didn't notice this one. But what about the history of the Austin Cooper Mini? It's got a ton of history behind it, so I thought it would be a good episode.
Ah, forehead slap.
I cannot
believe we haven't done the Mini yet. I know we've talked about Minis along the way.
Yeah.
But, you know, my focus on this one now, we talked about this off air, of course, you know, before we came in here. We've done a lot of research on this stuff. I think we decided to break it up into two sections, really. And we haven't even started the second section yet, so I'm not promising number two here yet, but we're gonna talk about the classic Mini today, which is the production version from 1959 through 2000.
Mm-hmm.
And everybody knows the classic Mini. They also know the new Mini, and we're not talking about the new BMW Mini, although there'll be little spots here and there where it gets a mention.
It comes up.
It does here and there. But for the most part, we're going to focus on the classic Mini going all the way back to 1959.
And let me just say before we get started that was a forehead slap moment for me too. It happens sometimes because we've touched on something in an earlier episode, and I feel like, oh, we've already covered this one, and I thought, oh, this is going to be a piece of cake because surely I have notes for this.
Yeah, but you know what it is? I think that along the way, and here's the was it rabbit hole? Is that what you call it? The rabbit hole that I fall into when I'm doing research, I'll get sidetracked so easily that let's say we were talking about something else and the Mini was part of that, and then I start looking into the Mini, and on my own, without, you know, even being part of our show or anything, I just start reading about it, and I learn the whole history of it, and then I look at variants of it, then I look at Mini clubs, and then I look at all kinds of different things, and pretty soon you feel like you've done a show on it because you've read so much about it or learned so much about it.
Sure.
And then, you know, months later you think, didn't we do something about that? Didn't we already cover that? But it turns out it just got maybe a sentence or two mentioned in the podcast.
Right.
So
I do the same thing with YouTube, man. Don't feel bad.
Same way. Yeah. So, I mean, it's like before you know it, half a day is gone. So Alex, we apologize for not doing the Mini. We're going to talk about it right now. And, and let's get started with, what?
I can get us started with a little bit of a precursor.
Oh, let's do that instead.
Some of the circumstances that led to the Mini.
Sounds good.
So the 1956 Suez Crisis, the fuel crisis, causes a shortage of fuel that is both unexpected and drastic.
Mm-hmm.
And I think this is one of the things that leads to the impetus for Leonard Lord to start working on what he called the Amalgamated Drawing Office Project Number 15.
Okay, so Leonard Lord, he was the chairman of the British Motors Corporation, right?
Yes.
BMC. And he actually ordered a vehicle, and this is created out of necessity. The Mini was created out of you know, a situation where, you know, we don't really have any way to adapt to this right now. We don't want this to happen again. What are we going to do to fix this for next time?
Yeah.
And you know, Leonard Lord says, you know, chairman of BMC says, we need a small fuel-efficient economy car that will fit the bill. We just don't have that right now. Now, they were making, you know, smaller cars already, but nothing that was really, really fuel-efficient, nothing that was, I guess the just the epitome of an economy car, the mm-hmm. most basic form of transportation that you could have, really. And he's got a guy on his team there who was a I'm going to mess up his name. He's the BMC engineer in charge of the whole thing, the automotive engineer. His name is Alec Isigonis.
I thought that was really good.
Maybe. I'm going to – should I spell it? I don't know. Maybe not.
Yeah. You know what? Just for safety, Isigonis.
Okay. And later, Sir Alec. Mm-hmm. So he was knighted at some point, and I would assume, Ben, I'm going to have to dig into him, but I believe that he was knighted for his work on this, because this vehicle that he designed eventually became a British icon. It was it's something that is, you know, completely tied to British style and mm-hmm. British, I guess, just the British landscape, really. I mean, it became so tied in with their culture and everything about, you know, British culture.
It's really up there with the Aston Martin and the Triumph.
Yeah, I know I'm stumbling over what to say here, but it's unmistakably British.
Yeah, and it uses British components as well. It's got we should talk. All right, his specifications were interesting.
Oh, yeah.
He said it needs to fit in a box.
Yeah, yeah, and it's a very small box. And that's I read the same thing. So maybe we were getting some information from the same place here. But he wanted to design something for maximum use with minimum space, right?
Mm-hmm.
And the exterior dimensions, he did design the vehicle to fit in a box, and the box was small. Do you know how small it was?
It was like 10x4x4.
Yeah, 10x4x4. It's so small. Mm. I mean, if you were to lay that out, if stretch it out with a ruler on the ground mm-hmm. or something, and figure out how big this is, not very big at all. And I mean, it's so the limits are set for the exterior dimensions. What are you going to do with the interior to make it work for four adults to be carried in this thing?
Oh, right. That's right. It's still a four-seater.
And, I mean, you've got the problem of where does the engine go? Because mm-hmm. most engines were mounted, so that the rear-wheel drive.
Right.
And he switched that around. He mounted the engine transversely, so that it became a front-wheel drive vehicle. And a lot of vehicles, of course, we know, mm-hmm. well, transferred that idea over to their own design.
And they had to they wanted to save money, so they couldn't build a new engine. They mm-hmm. had to find one that was already around.
Yeah, that's right. So they used the BMC A-Series engine that was already there. It was an 848cc version of that engine. And what's kind of funny about this is that, you know, when they switched it to the transverse mount, they had to find out a way to fit the transmission in there as well for the front-wheel drive.
Right.
And so they created this this front-wheel drive transmission that shares the oil sump with the engine.
Mm-hmm.
So it's all one lubrication system for the engine and the transmission. And again, you know, this is 1959, so you got to remember what's going on at the time. This is really pretty advanced for an economy car at this time. But again, it's trying to do a lot with a very little.
Right. And that's not the only innovative change they made. They also had a reverse pitch for the radiator and the engine mounted fan.
See, that's all to save space. It's so small. Have you ever seen the front? Have you ever been in the presence of a classic Mini and looked under the hood?
I've seen videos of it.
Okay. It's very, very small. I mean, when you're looking at it, it's like, well, you look at the front end, and you're like, well, where's the engine? It's got to be in the back. But it's not in the back. It's in the front, and it's a very tiny hood or bonnet, whatever you want to call it.
Stacked in there like Tetris pieces.
It's very, very small. And, of course, they moved the wheels all the way out to the four corners of the thing so that, you know, they had independent suspension and these kind of innovative rubber cone springs at the time.
Right, instead of the regular springs, right?
Exactly. And so, you know, another thing that did was it gave it incredible handling because, you know, the wheels are way out at the corners and there's no wheel arches within the body.
But it kind of gave it like go-kart handling, right? Isn't that the phrase that keeps popping up?
It still does, even with the, and here's our first mention of it, the BMW Mini, right?
Right.
So, you know, a lot of them say they have, I think they call it whiptastic handling in the BMW version, right? But a lot of people will say go-kart handling with the original Mini, and that's truly the case. And that's part of the reason is because the wheels are set so far out to the corners. And look at the back. I mean, the wheels are way, way in the back. The arches don't even impede into the passenger area at all.
Mm-hmm.
So it's very well designed. Exterior, interior, just maximum use of space. Now, it's got a top speed of only 70 miles per hour, the classic does.
Mm-hmm.
Fuel economy though, Ben. This is important. Fuel economy, and this is what it was built for, remember?
Right.
Really, really high, right?
Yeah, let me wait. I'm digging
50
through the numbers.
50 miles per gallon.
Oh, you beat me to it.
Oh, sorry. Oh, did you want me to wait for
it? No.
Oh, that's fine. I'll let you reveal some secrets later. How about that?
All right.
All right.
Deal.
So 50 miles per gallon on this, on the Classic Mini.
Which is enormously impressive in this time period.
It's enormously impressive now. I mean, it's really, it really is. I mean, this isn't a hybrid. This is an electric car. This is, this is a gas powered car, an economy car that gets 50 miles per gallon. And, I'm going to tell you, at the very end of the podcast, I want to do a little, like a specs back and forth between a 1964 and a, let's say a 2006.
That's great. Yeah.
Mini versions. And it'll kind of give you an idea of why, they were able to achieve 50 miles per gallon versus what they do now. But I guess best of all, and the one thing that I want to focus on here is that these things are fun to drive. He made this economy car that was exactly what they wanted, what they asked for. But he also gave it a little bit of flair.
Yeah, it wasn't just boring.
No, it wasn't a boring car at all. As a matter of fact, they were really excited about driving it. I mean, they became like an enthusiast, kind of a cult favorite for a short amount of time, and then it became just a widely known favorite.
Yep.
And not only that, racers started to, kind of gravitate toward this thing and said, this thing has got amazing handling capabilities. We just maybe need to get a bigger engine in this thing.
Right. And it's also, let's emphasize that part of the aim here was to simplify the construction. Now, mm-hmm. I know that sounds a little bit in conflict with the stuff we said earlier about the innovations in the engine, but they wanted part of an economy car is that it should be very well made and very simply made.
Mm-hmm.
And so this also, as we might see later, has some poses interesting opportunities for modification, right?
Sure.
But before we jump into that part, Scott, I think it's time for us to take a break for a word from our sponsor.
Sounds good. All right, and we're back. And, we'd mentioned that as we were going into break that we were talking about modifications, really. Mm-hmm. And, there were some racers that were kind of, interested in this thing. They wanted to use it for racing and road rally use. And, it was already nimble and pretty quick, but they just wanted just a little bit more power out of these things. So BMC joined up with the Cooper Car Company to build two variants of the Mini, for competition. And these variants became extremely popular. They were just these wildly popular versions of the Mini, and they were the Mini Cooper and the Mini Cooper S, obviously from the Cooper Car Company name. And, you can look up Cooper Car Company and find out some of the fantastic race cars that they had produced, before this and through this, as a matter of fact. They continued to do so.
Mm-hmm.
But the Cooper and the Cooper S models, they went on to win a lot of different rallies and races all over the world, really. Maybe the most infamous or famous, I guess, well, let's call it infamous. Was the Monte Carlo rally. And, they took the championship there 3 years, although there's a fourth year that has kind of an asterisk with it.
What? Why is that?
Well, in 1964, they had an outright win, in 1965, outright win, and in 1967, the same thing, outright win. But in 1966, there were actually four cars that finished that were disqualified. The first four cars that finished were disqualified. Three of those were Minis. Another one was a Ford Cortina.
Hmm.
And they were disqualified because, and again, the Minis won the 1966 race for real. But they were disqualified after the race because they found out that, get this, Ben, the headlights were illegal that they used in them. And the configuration of the filaments in the headlights. So they were using iodine vapor single filament bulbs instead of using these double filament dipping bulbs, which is what they're supposed to be using.
Oh man.
And that is the reason that they were disqualified. And I think that entire race, for the 1966 race in Monte Carlo, there's something like 10 cars that were disqualified that year. And it really hurt the credibility of that whole Monte Carlo event. And, a lot of people were, really upset about the whole thing, many should have had four wins in a row there. But they ended up with the 64, 65, and 67 win.
Oh, and we should also talk about I hate to go back a little bit, but we should talk about when the Mini actually emerged. And you could first see it as a member of the British public in 1959 in April. And it was announced in August as something that would be selling, But when they announced it, this is weird. When they announced it in August, they had already sent like 2,000 cars to a little bit less than 100 countries to show them off.
Really? So there was a huge push for this thing initially. Mm-hmm. And I think I read somewhere, and I don't have a number for this exactly, but I read somewhere that even in that first year, in 1959, they built something like more than 10,000 cars. So from August through December 31st, they built a high volume of cars. And that's going to come up later because, you know what? Let's just say it. I mean, between 1959, August of 1959 and October of 2000, 5.3 million Minis were produced and came off the line. So, that's an awful lot of cars. I mean, we're pushing into the Ford Model T, region of how many cars.
Now,
I mean,
right. That's
well,
good.
Sort of, I guess. Wasn't that like 15 million or something like that? It was over the top. But
yeah, but 5.3 million is huge.
That's a long production run. I mean, what is that? That's 41 years.
Mm-hmm.
And most cars, I'm going to say most cars, like most lines of vehicles don't really have a 41-year production cycle. So, 5.3 million, that's an awful lot of vehicles. And you know that Ford and his Model T, he was really cranking those out.
Right.
But,
yeah.
But still, 5.3, that's a huge number. And later, I mean, towards the end, I want to mention some awards that this thing received and that comes back up again.
Mm-hmm.
We talked about, the Mini, we talked about the Cooper, we talked about the Cooper S, these kind of outstanding versions of this thing. Well, there are a lot of different versions, I guess, really. There's, a lot of these different variants, right?
Right. There are, of course, the Mark I, which ran till 67. There's the Mark II, but then there are also some versions that were, attempting to be a bit more luxurious, maybe, a bit more high dollar, right?
Sure, yeah.
And that would be stuff like the Riley Elf, the Wolseley Hornet, and, what's interesting about these variants, before I get too overboard with it, is that a lot of them were, not a lot of them, but some of them were made by different companies.
Yeah, that's right, because Mini wasn't just built by the British Motor Corporation, as we mentioned earlier. Now, British Motor Corporation, or BMC, was only around they were around prior to this, but they were only in charge of the Mini operation from 1959 to 1968.
Mm-hmm.
And then British Leyland took over production, and that was from 1968 to 1986. And then eventually Rover Group took over production again, and that was in 1986 to 2000. So three main players there, really.
Mm-hmm. So that's where we see stuff like the Riley Elf in 68. A company named Alfi in Spain made some Mini variants starting in 1968 as well.
Mm-hmm. So it wasn't just British built or British owned, I guess, companies that throughout.
Mm-hmm.
That's part of the international flair of this vehicle, right?
True.
The appeal of this thing. Now you mentioned the different marks of this thing. Now there were a lot of different marks. It went all the way through Mark 7.
Right.
Mark 7 was launched in 1996 all the way through the end of the end of the classic production in 2000. And along the way, of course, Mark 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, they all had their own, interesting little twists and turns. Most of them were like, just a little different engine size. They switched something around in the interior.
Sure.
It wasn't a dramatic, they didn't do a complete overhaul of the whole thing, really.
Right. They weren't remixes. They were really more small variations on a theme.
Mm-hmm.
But there were also things that we should mention that Mini also did, such as the two-door version, right?
Mm-hmm.
The truck. And the van, the truck and the van, especially for such a small footprint for a vehicle. When I saw these, I first saw one of these years ago in a picture, not in real life.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought, well, somebody made that at his own house or in his own garage, or that's Photoshopped.
No, they have that kind of look to them. I know what you're talking about.
Mm-hmm.
The truck version especially.
Yeah.
I'm a big fan of the other variants of this, the van and the truck body.
Yeah.
They just look so unusual. They have a really interesting body line to them.
I like the
two-door, saloon,
I
guess it's not a sedan really, but
yeah, it's a saloon.
Yeah,
but the thing I like about the minivan, what got me is that it looks as though it's a diminutive pickup truck with just a hard shell atop the bed.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah, definitely. You're right about the backyard look to it. It seems like I saw a couple of these vehicles. Remember when that micro and mini car museum was around?
Yeah, yeah.
I want to say that he had a version of this, but I could be wrong. I'll have to look through the inventory again.
Down in Madison, Georgia.
Yeah, I'll have to definitely check it out. But man, there's a lot to mention here. Now, a couple of other things that you know we didn't get to here. Mm. There's the van that you mentioned. So the minivan, which is kind of funny to say it that way, but the Mini Moke, which is kind of an unusual vehicle, open top.
Mm-hmm.
I've seen a lot of these around, believe it or not. 1964 to 1989.
Yeah, that was around for a while.
Yeah, and I saw one just last summer, a bright yellow one that had kind of it sounded like a little racing engine in it or something. It was on the street, mm-hmm. full roll cage and everything, and it was really cool. But if you've never seen a Mini Moke, take a look at it. There's one that shows up to the local caffeine and carburetors type show that we have
caffeine and octane.
Caffeine and octane or whatever it is, yeah. There's one that's in pretty rough condition that shows up there too. Worth looking at.
Mm-hmm.
And then there was the Morris Mini K, which was an Australian only version that sold all the way up until about 1971.
Mm-hmm.
So man, there's a lot of these things.
We didn't mention the Morris Mini Traveler, the Austin Mini Countryman,
mm-hmm.
Both of which have pretty short production lines, right? That was only 8 years or so, 7 or 8 years?
Something like that. It was pretty short.
Like 61 to 69.
So some versions of these are a lot more rare than other versions. You know, the two-door saloon, that's the one that, most of the vehicles were that. And you're going to see a lot of classic Minis that are that design.
Oh,
go ahead.
As a matter of fact, you can see classic Minis almost everywhere you look if you were looking in entertainment, in films or television. But before we get to any of that other stuff, let's take a break. Let's get some coffee and water and have a word from our sponsors.
All right, so we're back now, and we mentioned early on that this was, and I kind of fumbled through this description of this, but I was so iconic, how it was so so very British to own one of these things, right? Now they're becoming omnipresent in Britain at this time. You know, they're all over the place, and a lot of influential and very popular people have these vehicles. Now, actor Peter Sellers drove one. A couple of members of the Beatles drove these things.
Mm-hmm.
They were used in movies and in television. I think one of the mentions here is the Mr. Bean Show, which was 1990 to 1995. He drove a Mini,
right?
And then, of course, how could we not mention the Italian Job?
I think we should go ahead and mention both Italian Jobs.
Oh,
right?
That's right. Yeah, there's the classic in 1969.
And the 2003 remake.
Exactly, yeah, which I went to see at the theater. I did not see the classic in the theaters. I wish I had on the big screen. That would have been really cool. But, both versions of that film are pretty good. So, check those out. And, man, there's just so much about Mini that is, again, it's just so classic, so iconic.
Mm-hmm.
For the British culture. I mean, it's what it's all about. And I tell you, Ben, one thing that I wanted to mention here during this podcast, and I haven't really gotten to it yet.
All right.
And it doesn't really fit in here, but I'm going to do it anyways.
It's a sidebar.
The first time I ever saw one of these things, ever.
Uh-huh.
I was pretty young. I was a teenager driving, I think it was just a weekend, like a Sunday, I know it was a Sunday morning. I was driving outside of my neighborhood, and I saw this orange car pass by, and I'd never seen anything in my life like it. Never. And, I hadn't really investigated these things. This is before the days of the internet, and I wasn't really searching around for this stuff. And where I lived, there just weren't any other versions of this. So this orange car goes by, like bright orange,
traffic cone orange.
Traffic cone orange, that's what I was looking for. And I thought, what the heck was that? It looks so cool. And I tried to follow it. I was near a lake. And, so there's like twisty, turny roads, a couple of stoplights here and there. And it was a woman who pulled into a church. And literally a little old lady that pulled into a church. And I saw where she parked. And I said, I have to know, what is this vehicle? I pulled up kind of next to it, and I said, I just have to know, what is it? And she told me all about it and the story about it. And she said, it might be for sale. And I thought, well, this is really cool. So she gave me her phone number, and she told me to come by and take a look at it later. And I was looking for the time. Remember the MG that I mentioned I had? At the time, I didn't have the MG, and I was looking for a car to buy. And the only reason that I didn't buy that Mini that we talked about just now was because it had a bad synchro in second gear. And I was a little bit concerned about the transmission, and I went with the MG instead. But I was this close to buying that first the first Mini that I ever saw, because it was just such a cool thing. And she even gave me a ride in it later. It was just, she was a really good person, really nice and fun to talk to, and it gave me a little bit of history about them. But I've been hooked ever since.
I gotta tell you, I don't want you to feel bad about this, Scott, because regrets are unhealthy. But the orange color makes me wonder if it's one of the infamous, the orange box.
Oh,
I
had
that nickname.
Yeah.
That
no,
was
this
one
is
of
a,
the early names.
This for sure. This was a, kind of a secondhand paint job. You know, it was definitely not from the factory that way. They had painted themselves, but it was well done. Everything was really nice about it. I love the car. It was just that bad synchro that, it gave me kind of a bad feeling. Like, I don't want to buy another car, a toy car, that's immediately going to need a transmission.
You know what I'm talking about, though, when I say the orange box?
I don't think I do.
It's the 1957 original prototype.
Really?
And it was called the orange box because of its very noticeable orange color.
Oh, I didn't know that.
You might have been able to buy the original prototype.
Oh, no,
okay, it totally can't be.
It definitely was not.
Don't feel
bad. But no, seriously, that was the very first Mini that I ever saw in my whole life.
Uh-huh.
And I was pretty young, you know, I was probably 18, 19. And I was just super excited about it, and I nearly bought it just mm-hmm. because I had never seen anything like that. And once I started investigating it, do you remember you'd have to pick up copies of, what was that? Not the Trade and Times.
Auto but, Trader?
No, it wasn't even Auto Trader. I'll think of it in a moment.
But, okay.
But you had to pick up the copy of the magazine that had the little tiny, personal, but classified ads.
Yeah.
And if it didn't have what you wanted, that was it. You know, you wasted 75 cents on it, and that's it.
You were SOL.
I started looking them up, and I started kind of finding them. And there were a few around town that I finally went to look at and drive. And I was pretty excited about them, but I quickly found out that the Cooper and the Cooper S were way out of my price range.
Yeah.
And those were the ones I wanted.
See, now this is the thing. I'm a fan of big cars. I appreciate it. I have had experiences before where I lived in my car for a little bit and, you know, just an extra few cubic inches inside make a huge difference. So I was not naturally drawn to the idea of buying a Mini Cooper. And when I see how convenient they are in a city, though, first off, it makes perfect sense for some of the more densely populated areas of the UK. Secondly, it makes some great sense. Can you imagine how convenient it is to park one of those things?
Oh, it's extremely easy. Yeah, I mean, I've got limited experience behind the wheel. I mean, just those test drives after the orange one that I talked about, where I just had a ride in it. But they're extremely easy to maneuver, and they're very very nimble. They handle well. They're super quick because they're lightweight. You know, the classics were. They get great mileage. They're just it seems like it's a good purchase all around. I mean, now the problem is, you know, they're not as safe as modern vehicles.
That is true.
So if you're looking for something that has, you know, all the airbags and the bells and whistles.
Collision
and,
points, and, crumple zones.
Exactly. And it may not be the best, you know, application for, you know, snowy Michigan winter either where I was looking.
Yeah.
So, you know, it was going to be a toy car, really. I mean, yeah. I knew it was. So just like the MG eventually would be.
Right. Like it might not be the best road trip car if you're with a group of people, because it is, I'll give you this. It's one of those cars that when you sit inside of it, it looks like it's bigger on the inside than it is on the outside
mm-hmm.
because the space is very well used.
Yeah, you get inside and you're surprised at how big it is inside. I mean,
right.
Even in the back seat. I mean, it's a little cramped, of course, because,
yeah.
You know, I'm going to talk about dimensions at the end of this podcast, I promise, because there's some...
Because we still have to do the comparison.
Surprising stuff there. But before we do that, you know what I want to do? I'd like to talk about a couple of awards and then an event that not a lot of people really heard about, but maybe should have. If that'll intrigue you a little bit.
I'm intrigued.
But there have been a lot of awards for the classic Mini along the way, as you can imagine,
mm-hmm.
I mean, the 41-year production run. So these are some of maybe the most notable examples. There's the Car of the Century Award from
mm-hmm.
Auto Car Magazine in 1995. There's the Number One Classic Car of All Time Award, which is from Classic and Sports Car Magazine in 1996. There's also the European Car of the Century Award, which was really, that was part of a poll, I guess, a mm-hmm. worldwide internet poll that was run by Global Automotive Elections Foundation in 1999. And then, I don't know, this may be one of the bigger ones. And they didn't actually outright win this one.
I think this is the most prestigious one.
I think it is. Now, this last one, a huge achievement for many. They won, and they didn't win. This is second place. Mm-hmm. But get this, this is for Global Car of the Century. Which was in the same poll, and they came in second place behind
behind the Ford Model T.
Yeah. So, I mean, is that really losing? I mean, because
I don't think that's really losing.
How can you battle the Ford Model T? I mean, that's obviously going to be the global car of the century, I would think. I mean, that's really what all this is about.
I think the Ford Model T is going to be number one in that ranking for a very long time.
I think so. Maybe, yeah. I mean, a long, long time. So anyways, the second place in that poll is really, to me,
it's like first place in any other
poll.
That's like
a victory. Now, yeah. Those are the awards. The criticisms. There's criticisms about the new Mini.
Oh yes. Okay. So you're gonna list some of these, but we were already talking about how maybe later we're gonna do another part, another podcast with the Mini, right?
Maybe. Yeah. We're gonna talk about the new Mini later, and there'll be a lot of positives in there. But,
okay.
But
let's
do
the criticism.
I just want to say that you know the there are a lot of major awards for the Classic Mini, and I'm sure that there were criticisms along the way. Mm-hmm. But as you find, you know, when you read these reviews, a lot of the criticisms come from the new Mini, the BMW version, and the reason is because you've got people that hold on to what they hold dear with the Classic Mini, and they compare it and contrast it, and they don't like what they see. Because these are guys, these two that I'm going to mention here, that have experience with the Classic Mini more so than the new Mini. Mm-hmm. And just to give you an idea, like this one is an automotive journalist. His name is Dan Neal.
Okay.
And he said, with the introduction of the Countryman, Mini has pushed the mark beyond relevance by making a car so long, wide, and tall, it forsakes the inner logic of the brand, which is excellent handling in a tiny space.
I see.
And so that's all right. That's pretty a lot of criticism there. That's,
it's his opinion, but it is a valid difference.
Now, there's another guy named Dr. Alex Moulton. And Dr. Alex Moulton has an even tighter bond with this now. He was the suspension system designer for the original two-door Mini, the Classic. So mm-hmm. he's got hands-on experience with the original Mini, part designer, you know, of some of the internal components of this thing. In an interview with Mini World Magazine, he said it's enormous, referring to the BMW Mini in 2006. The original Mini was the best packaged car of all time. This is an example of how not to do it. He says it's huge on the outside, and it weighs as much as an Austin Maxi. The crash protection has been taken way too far. I mean, what do you want? It says, what do you want? I mean, what do you want? An armored car? It's the irrelevance is so far that it has no part in the Mini story. So he's really, really saying that, you know, this is just not the thing for him. But, you know, again, this is some guy that was intimately involved with the development of the Classic Mini. He's obviously going to have some bad feelings towards the new Mini. I mean, that's an extreme, of course.
Right. But also, in their defense, I have two responses to that. One,
sure,
in their defense, and one, just a point about that kind of experience. Mm-hmm. First point being that it's in the name, Scott. It's supposed to be small.
Now,
so I see some validity to what they're saying.
That's what I feel, Ben.
Yeah, second point, and I think this has to be said. Second point, whether we're talking Star Wars or classic cars, people who are fans are usually fans of the early stuff, the first thing they encountered. So I'm sure that there are quite a few younger people who maybe prefer the new Mini.
Oh, absolutely. And they'll say, like, why would you ever buy that Classic Mini? That thing's a piece of junk.
Right. And before anybody writes an email, I don't like Jar Jar Binks either.
So, yeah, I guess it's all perspective. It's all where you come from, you know, your first experience and what you think is valuable in something like
this.
Which
doesn't make it invalid at all. It just makes it your opinion.
No. Everybody's got their own opinion. And those two that I just mentioned, those two critics, you know, they've got their own opinion, of course. And there's other people that are just, you know, gushing about how great the current BMW Mini is. And they love that one compared to the Classic. So, you know, look around, you'll find, you know, different versions of all this. Now,
Speaking of comparisons.
Yeah, comparisons. I've got paper stapled together here with notes all over it, and I'll keep it quick.
All right.
But there's a comparison between the 1964 Mini Cooper S and then the 2006 BMW Mini Cooper S. So it's an apples-to-apples comparison, I guess, right?
In theory.
Now, remember, this is these are, what, 42 years apart,
mm-hmm.
These vehicles. So here's the difference. The 64 had about 70 horsepower. The 2006 has 163 horsepower.
Wow.
The torque for the same vehicle, again, 64, 62 foot-pounds. The torque for the 2006 Mini is 154.9 foot-pounds, so a considerable amount more torque as well.
Yeah, a lot more.
So a lot more power. The brake size went up considerably in 2006. It went up from 7.5 in the also drum power assist rear brakes in the 1964 version. It went up to 10.9 inches, and now it has discs in the back with ABS and electronic brake distribution. So it's far more advanced, far bigger brakes, far better stopping capability.
Sure.
And the reason that it needs more stopping capability is because of the weight, Ben. Now, this is one of the big things.
Okay. I was hoping you'd get to this one.
So dimensions, I mean, I guess we'll talk about dimensions in just a moment, but I want to point out here that the weight has more than doubled in the current Mini from the classic Mini. Originally, it was 1,250 pounds. The newer version is 2,513 pounds, so it's more than double the original weight of the classic Mini. That's because of the exterior dimensions, all the safety gear that it carries now, you know, all the airbags and electronic systems, the ABS, the electronic brake distribution, brake force distribution, all that stuff. The length of the vehicle now, it's nearly 2 feet longer than the classic Mini. The classic Mini was 123 inches, which is about 10 feet.
Right.
The current Mini is about 142.8 inches. So it's 20 inches longer. It's also 20 inches wider, and it's also 3 inches taller than the classic Mini. So it's a considerably bigger package that this thing is coming in. And, again, all that weight is probably a lot of safety equipment, a lot of, bolstering of the side, you know, the impact doors,
the panels,
the panels and all that stuff. I mean,
well, also to be fair, and I know that I'm just playing devil's advocate for everybody now, and I just switched sides to defend the new Mini. But to be fair, in the new Mini situation, between the 60s and 2000s, there are so many more safety regulations that are required to be put in vehicles.
Well, they have to have that stuff in there.
And, to legally be sold.
I mean, there's a big, big difference in this thing. Now, remember I mentioned that, and I'm going to get to that in just a second, but the top speed, of the original was about 90 miles per hour.
Yeah.
Now the top speed of this one is something like 135 and a half. It's electronically limited to that. So a lot better high speed, or top speed rather.
Mm-hmm.
I thought I read that the original Mini was 70 miles per hour, but.
Well, the original was 70, I think, when they were prototyping.
Oh, and the Mini Cooper S. It really upped it. So another 20 miles per hour, so 90 miles per hour, something like that. You're right. So that's the original specs. Now, man, the other thing that this plays into is the 0 to 60 times. Now, 0 to 60 was 13 seconds on in the 1964 Mini Cooper S.
Okay. It's not going to win a race.
That is not super fast, I'll tell you that. 0 to 60 in the 2006 BMW Mini is something like 7.5 seconds. So it's roughly half the original.
In a lot of ways, it looks like it's more than twice the power. And about half the acceleration time. So
it's twice as quick.
So they're really emphasizing performance.
Sure. Now, one thing that, that really is pretty shocking is when you look at the miles per gallon. Remember I mentioned miles per gallon in the original?
50 mpg.
50 miles per gallon in the Mini Cooper S. Now,
is this going to make me angry?
Maybe a little bit, but the 2006 BMW Mini, the miles per gallon, the EPS estimates were 29 miles per gallon.
Okay. All right. Wait. Stop there because, Mr. Moulton's criticism of the size of the Mini.
Sure. The size, the weight, the safety things, the options that they had to carry.
I understand that. And I do respect somebody's opinion there. But then again, you know, I made that point about fans and about, somebody's opinion being valid doesn't mean you have to agree with it. But 50, dropping to the 20s for mile per gallon. Scott, this car was originally conceived to be a fuel saver.
Sure.
And granted, that's not that bad.
Well, and it was for 41 years. That's where you got to look at that too. I mean, when it came into this newer model, this new evolution, the restrictions on this thing were so much more. And I know that the Mini gained weight over the years as well. I know that, you know, other things were.
It's not like you're talking about celebrity.
Well, that's right. Over the 41 years, it did gain significant weight, just like I have. So anyways, I know the interior became a lot more, plush along the way. You know, the seats weren't quite as Spartan as they were. You know, there are more gauges here and there. They're, you know, just, little things along the way that add up, and they continually add up and add up. And then by the time you get to 2006, you know, of course, it's a complete redesign.
Well, also, it's BMW, so they want to have a certain they want to avoid brand dilution.
Of course. And, you know, this is it's a solid car. I mean, it's well built. Everything.
We're not knocking it.
I'm not down on the BMW Mini at all, by any means. But, I'm just saying, compared to the original, you know, it's twice as heavy, gets, far less miles per gallon, of course, you know, because of the weight.
Very different vehicle.
I mean, I think we've beat this into the ground already. We probably shouldn't go anymore, but it's a completely different vehicle.
Before we get out of here, do you have one more thing?
I have one more thing that I'd like to include.
One more thing.
All right. So recently, Ben, my dad was on this trip, this kind of like all around Michigan road trip, right? Mm-hmm. And he and his wife and another couple were on this trip, and they're traveling to, you know, scenic places all around the state of Michigan where they live.
Oh, that's
and,
cool.
And so they were going all around the coast, and, you know, to the Sleeping Bear Dunes and all that, you know, staying overnight and all these places. And one of the places they went to was Mackinac City. And Mackinac City is way, way at the extreme northern end of the lower peninsula of Michigan. And there's, of course, the lower peninsula, upper peninsula. And they're connected by the Mackinac Bridge. It's a 5-mile bridge that connects, again, the lower UP, I'm sorry, the lower peninsula and the upper peninsula. And then from there you can drive on into Canada. And so this bridge, this Mackinac Bridge, was having this, well, not the Mackinac Bridge, but part of the Mackinac Bridge, and a local Mini dealer, a local BMW Mini dealer, along with some kind of, I think it was just an enthusiast group, were getting together. This is the day they were in Mackinac. They were having this, this mini event, and so they get to Mackinac, and there's, literally, it seems like 1,000 minis in the town. And he's saying, well, what's going on? You know, it's got to be a club event of some kind.
Sure.
Turns out they were doing something called Mini on the Mac. And it's a parade of Mini Coopers that was going to cross the Mackinac Bridge to try to see how many Mini Coopers they could get on the Mackinac Bridge at one time. And it turns out that day they fell short of the record. They were able to achieve 848 Mini Coopers on the bridge at one time. The record, which was set, when was it set? I think it was set in 2009, is 1,450 Mini Coopers on the bridge at one time. So, they fell short of that record, but the one thing the reason I really looked this up, and I can show you some photos of,
sure,
of this event happening. Again, it's called Mini on the Mac. You can look it up. My dad said that, you know, he talked to some guy who was there, and the guy had looked kind of frazzled, and he had just showed up just at that moment. And he said, I just want to be part of it because I'm a Mini owner. I'm from Mackinac City, and I didn't even hear about this event until today when all these Minis rolled into town. So I think that the word just didn't get out fast enough to make this record really happen. You know, it wasn't widespread enough. You know, I think
there's always next year.
Yeah, I think next year, because they just need to spread the word a little more and get some people out there. But, you know, again, 848 Minis on Mackinac Bridge at one time. That's still pretty impressive, but that's like, what is it, like 600 short of the record. So
yeah, the record is 1,400 and what?
450. 1,450. So yeah, there's 600 more for next year. So if you're a Mini owner, mm-hmm, you know, pay attention to something called Mini on the Mac next year.
Look up Mini on the Mac. Be a part of world record history. Setting world records is cool.
Man, Ben, I feel like I've just been all over the place in this podcast. I hope it's somehow gelled together into the classic Mini story.
I you know what? I think we have gelled into the classic Mini story. We've also visited some other places along the way, and I really like ending with Mini on the Mac because it's cool to end with something that people can directly involve themselves in. You know what I mean?
So watch for it next year. It happened early August this year. I have no idea when it's coming up next year, but I would assume around the same time.
And in the meantime, you can let us know what you think about your Mini, about the new Minis, because I'm sure we're going to hear about it. Is the new Mini a different car? Is it a Mini and Cooper in name only? We'd love to hear your opinion. Maybe send some photos of yourself with your trusty Cooper.
I would love to see that. I'm a big fan of these vehicles.
You can visit our website, carstuffshow.com, to see, to hear this podcast again, to hear all of our podcasts, to check out this nifty blog thing that you and I are doing now, Scott. We've even got some videos there. And you can drop us a line on Facebook. You can send us a tweet on Twitter. Or you can write an email to us directly. We are
carstuff@discovery.com.
For more more on this and thousands of other topics, visit HowStuffWorks.com. Let us know what you think. Send an email to podcast@HowStuffWorks.com.
This episode of Car Stuff is brought to you by Michelin.